Hello. I was a little slow to pick up the mic. I was texting my daughter. She had a presentation at school today, and I just got a text from her saying, you know, that her teacher hated her presentation, and he wants her to do it all over again, and she has to do it on Wednesday. And she says, I did all that work for nothing. And then she said, kill me. So I wrote her back and said, I'd rather not kill you, and I think you did a great job. So that's what I was doing when you dropped the mic. And that's why I was a little slow picking it up. You know, it's funny. It's funny watching, you know, Jasmine grow up and, you know, watching her believe that, you know, everything she does has to be done in a certain way or be approved of by other people. Or, you know, like yesterday she was under a lot of stress trying to get this project done well. And she really did, by the way, do a great job. I'm not certain why the teacher hated it. But it's kind of funny watching her just, you know, take everything so seriously. And it's also nice, I would say, not taking everything so seriously with her. I know that there are some parents that are, you know, very caught up in what their child is going through, and they would either, you know, also be angry at the child for not doing their best, or be angry at the teacher for not thinking it was the best. And it's just so nice to be able to be there and be supportive without being caught up in it. It reminds me of a saying that maybe we've all heard. It's not really a saying, it's an analogy that maybe we've all heard that I used to not understand. It was the analogy of if somebody is down in a hole, you can't help them out of the hole if you go down into it with them. You remember that? And I used to have so much trouble understanding how, when something was so horrible, you know, like if we use this story as an example, like the teacher hated her project when she did such a good job, you know, how can I, you know, not be caught up in that because it's so important? And now it's very natural not to be caught up in it. Jamie is pacing. She wants me to let her out. So hold on one second. Come on, my love. Yeah, we definitely don't have to believe people's perceptions. I mean, we don't even have to believe our own perceptions. We certainly don't have to believe anybody else's perceptions. So I think Jasmine did a great job yesterday. I'm sure her teacher had different expectations, which is why he didn't perceive it as a great job, and she'll do it again, and that's all okay, and I love her, and I'm not going to kill her. Like I said, I'd rather not kill you. I think you did a great job. End of story. I guess I'll start by playing a Christmas song again. I guess that's what I'll do. When I just checked to see what was next, that's what I felt. So we'll follow that. The Christmas song that I'll play is the one that I posted on Facebook this morning. This is Josh Groban singing. And it's from the movie, which is really quite a good movie. Let's see, what's it called? Polar Express. That's a very good movie. The first time I saw it in IMAX, and it was really, really nice seeing it in IMAX. The name of the song is Believe, but I feel that in this particular song, the word believe really means, you know, trust all things. That's really what the word believe means. You know, it's really talking about trusting our inner urgings, you know, what our heart is asking us to do, as well as trusting all of the other unfoldings, everything that seems to be outside of us. Because, of course, it's all one, right? Our inner urgings and everything else that's unfolding, it all actually fits together. So it's about trusting all of that without any judgment. You know, there's something that is calling us forward into whatever our heart is guiding us into. And at the same time, it's moving us forward through all of the other unfoldings that are happening. And we may not understand it, but we can go with it, especially if we trust it or you know, trust/believe in it. Also, the song talks a little bit about how sometimes we may feel lost. But really all we need to do is to wait in trust, or trust in our own inner guidance, trust in the entire universe and the way it's unfolding, and soon things become clear again. So for me, the key thought in this song is the trust / believe thought, plus the idea just to enjoy the ride. You know, if you're worried the whole way, then it can be a stressful ride. The ride is still going to the same destination. If you have this thought, trust, believe, the ride still goes in the same direction, but now you're able to relax and enjoy the ride. So here is Josh Groban, and the song is Believe. Just about 15 minutes ago, I'll just say my heart spoke to me. There was a feeling that came. You know, it's a feeling that I have always called guidance. Like when this feeling comes, this is the feeling that I call guidance. And the feeling that came about 15 minutes ago, I just emailed Dove a moment ago. I don't even know if he's seen the email yet. But the feeling that came was after 2012, so in just a few more weeks, I'm not going to be teaching seven steps on Monday anymore. I don't really know why. There was just a feeling to go ahead and let Dove know that, and I suppose let everybody else know that this time slot will be free in case somebody else is feeling guidance to teach something during this time. But I will continue for the rest of the year, which means I'll be teaching, I think it's after today, three more weeks, including Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. I will teach both of those days. Those fall on Mondays. But starting in the new year, I won't be. And I don't know why, but it's interesting because, you know, the song we just listened to said, "Trust in starlight to guide where you need to be." And that's kind of what the feeling is about this, that I don't know why I'm moving away from the Monday teaching, but there's a reason. And there's some place that I need to be, or some reason why I need to be available, or something else that I need to be doing. And I just need to trust the starlight, or trust this inner guidance that I'm feeling, to clear my calendar on Mondays to be available for whatever is coming. So that's what I'm going to be doing. And then the song went on to say, "Believe in what you feel inside." And so that's what I'm feeling right now. So just FYI, I will still continue to teach seven steps on Sunday night. I just won't be doing it during this time slot on Monday. So beginning the 1st January in 2013, I won't be doing the Monday teachings anymore. Why don't we just take a moment of silence, and then we'll get started with today's seven steps. Amen. All right, we're starting today where we left off last night, which is number 430. I will give a link to 430 in the room. If you happen to be listening on the radio, you want to go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And then you'll want to go to step two. You can get there either on the menu bar or on the side menu. You'll also find step two. And underneath step two, you want to click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 430, because that's where we're beginning today. And of course, I will start by reading number 430 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is the Supreme Yoga, or Yoga Vasistha, that is being quoted. And this is the quote. "It is on account of ignorance that this long dream world appearance appears to be real. It is on account of ignorance that this long dream world appearance appears to be real." All right, so let's look at the journal entry. "Seeing, believing without questioning permits continuation of body world illusion as reality. Questioning, then, is the dismantling of false reality." So I talked a lot about this last night. This is almost a review of what we talked about last night. That, you know, we see something. Again, it can be as simple as, you know, seeing a magnifying glass, seeing a microphone, seeing a tennis shoe or sneaker, if you call it that, seeing a telephone, and believing that is a magnifying glass, that is a microphone, that is a sneaker, that is a telephone. You know, even that simple believing keeps us caught in believing that the world is real. And that's exactly why we talked about this last night. That's exactly why Jesus put the lessons in the Course first that he put in the Course first. Those lessons are asking us to doubt our own seeing, doubt our own thinking, even about simple things. Because in those first lessons, we keep our eyes open and we look around the room, right? And our eyes are landing on things like magnifying glasses and microphones and sneakers and telephones. And we're practicing the lessons with those things. And we may not understand why we're practicing the lesson with those things, but it's because even our believing in those things is keeping us believing in the world. I cannot say this is a magnifying glass, you know, especially with emphasis, without also really saying that the world is real. Hold on 1 second. Jamie wants back in. So, the seeing, believing loop, as I call it, the seeing, believing loop, needs to be questioned. Our belief in what we see needs to be questioned. Our belief in what we think needs to be questioned. Our belief in what we experience needs to be questioned. And if it never is questioned, then the loop just continues uninterrupted, and the world continues to be real. So inquiry or investigation or questioning, they're all the same thing. That's not just something to do. You know, that actually dismantles false reality by dismantling the seeing, believing that seems to keep false reality in place. So questioning is very important. I helped a friend this weekend question, she was very upset about something she said. And it was clear that her upset went a lot deeper than the appearance of this mistake that she seemed to make by saying what she said. And so it was very clear that we needed to question and look underneath it and find out what she was actually believing. And this questioning can be very enlightening. You know, we see people like Byron Katie leading this type of questioning all the time. So questioning or investigation or inquiry is a very important tool. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that are also helpful. You know, for example, meditation. Meditation can be very, very helpful. It has its place. But it seems like, at least in my experience, that if there's a meditation that happens and I get feeling very peaceful and very clear in the meditation, but then I walk away from the meditation and I continue the seeing, believing without ever questioning my believing, it seems like the meditation then becomes only a Band-Aid. You know, I feel good temporarily for the time that I'm meditating, but pretty soon I'm caught back up in the stress of my believing. So there are a lot of different tools that all work together. And questioning is an important part of that toolbox that we have that helps us to wake up. So that's really what this is saying. If we just read 4:30 again and then we'll move on. Seeing, believing without questioning permits continuation of body world illusion as reality. Questioning, then, is the dismantling of false reality. So an important tool. And then you can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 431. And I will also post 431 in the room. And I will read 431 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. It is by self-knowledge that the unreality of the concepts concerning worldly objects is realized. It is by self-knowledge, of course, this is the capital S self. It is by self-knowledge that the unreality of the concepts concerning worldly objects is realized. All right, let's look at the journal, number 431. This is an inquiry that's happening in this particular journal entry. And I've spoken before that when the inquiry happens in the journal, the way that I experience this inquiry is first the question arises and then the answer arises. If the ego is doing anything in this process, the ego is just realizing both the question and the answer as both are given. The ego or the thinking mind does not come up with the question. There's no thinking that comes up with the question. And there's also no thinking in order to get the answer to the question. Both the question and the answer are given. And at best, the ego is just a witness to this process. What is self-knowledge? Being, existing, here, now, present, isness, and when looked at carefully, unaffected. Now, of course, these are all just words, but they're words that were written down during a time of seeing. And then there are words that were used to attempt to describe with words that which was being seen. And it's interesting because it says, and when looked at carefully, unaffected. What that really means is that if the isness or the beingness, the capital S self, is really watched, what we see is that it never changes. It doesn't matter whether the person appears happy or upset, whether the person appears or whether the body appears healthy or sick. This isness is completely unaffected. But we have to be able to look at it even as the person is shifting in order to see that. So when the person is shifting into happiness or shifting into upset, we need to be able to look at the isness in both of those cases in order to notice that it hasn't changed. The next question, what is knowledge of things in the world? Well, observing, not being. Analysis, assumption, and deduction. So, I knew I had a funny example. I had to think for a second for it to come back to my mind. But Jasmine is always watching these funny little things on YouTube. You know, these little YouTubes that people stick up that go viral, as they say. And there's this one, I think she got it on YouTube. It might have been on Funniest Home Videos because she watches that too. So I can't remember if it was the television show or if it was a YouTube that she was watching. But some boys, some young boys, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 at the oldest, were playing in the house, and they happened to be playing, you know, on the floor in the bathroom. And they opened the cabinet and they pulled out their mother's tampons. And the boys are in the process of like playing kind of like war games, you know, how boys are. And when they first pull out the tampons, they don't know what they are. And at first, one of the boys looks at his mom and says, "Mom, what's this?" But then before she can answer, he says, "Oh, I know, it's dynamite." It's dynamite. And then the boys are excited to have found some pretend dynamite that they can use in their game that they were already playing. You know, it fit in perfectly with their illusion. You know, that's what this second part of 431 reminds me of. What is knowledge of things in the world? Well, it's not actually knowledge at all. You know, like we talked about last night, the only true knowledge, the only way to really know anything is to be it. This was a Nisargadatta quote that came early in the Seven Steps to Awakening. The only way to know anything is to be it. So with that absolute definition of knowledge, the only thing that we truly know is that which we are, which is described in the first question, you know, with a number of words, being. We know being. We know existing. We really do know here now. We know present. We know isness. And if we look carefully, we know unaffected. We know these things because we are it. But I cannot know an object of the world because I'm not being any object. I can observe an object, and I observe it with my five senses. I can analyze it like that little boy did. He quickly analyzed this object that he found and decided it was dynamite, right? But that's not really knowledge. And in fact, the little boy's example proves that's not really knowledge. So that's where the third question comes up. Which is factual and which is not factual? Self-knowledge is factual because it comes from direct knowledge or being. World knowledge is not factual. It can change. I mean, someday that little boy's dynamite is going to turn into a tampon, right? And he won't be so excited to find it, right? This magnifying glass that I'm holding in my hand actually is very heavy and probably could be a weapon. And as we know, everything in the world changes. With time, with a lot of time maybe, some people say a little time, some people say just December 21st of this year. But with time, this entire world that I perceive and everything in it, including the magnifying glass, could vaporize, no longer even exist, right? So, nothing in the world is actually a fact. There's only one fact, and I believe this is also stated in A Course in Miracles, although I can't quote it or even remember exactly where it comes from, but as I'm saying it, it seems like I remember this idea being in the Course. There is only one fact, and that fact is what we call the self, the isness, the truth. Lately the word truth has been coming up for me. That's the only fact. Everything else is not a fact. And it's completely capable of change. In fact, inevitably at some point it will change. So the next question is world knowledge truly knowledge then? And the answer is no, because the world cannot be known directly. I talked to someone else yesterday who was upset about something. It's funny because in August of 2011, I felt suddenly guided right before a teaching. Just like today, I was suddenly guided right before a teaching. I felt suddenly guided to let go of counseling, talking to people on the phone. And I haven't done that now in like a year and a half. But in the last week and a half, people have been spontaneously calling again. That seems to be happening again. Just started. I've had several calls. I'm not even sure why all of a sudden that the calls are coming, but they are. So you see how everything always is changing. Apparently that time away from counseling has come to an end now, and counseling is coming back. But I talked to someone yesterday who was really upset by something he witnessed. And as we talked, you know, what he started to realize as we talked was a part of his upset. He still felt like there was more he needed to look at. But a part of his upset was because he thought he knew what he saw. He thought he understood it. He thought his interpretation about it and his ideas about it were correct, that they were fact. And then he did not like that fact, and so he was upset. As he began to see that these were only his perceptions, his interpretations, and that maybe he didn't really know what he saw, he actually began to feel more at peace. He could only be upset at a fact that was out of harmony with truth. When it seemed like it was a fact and it was out of harmony with truth, he was upset by it. When it ceased to be a fact in his mind, when uncertainty opened up, when he realized maybe it's not what it appears to be, he was able to be at peace. Because then the appearance of something that was certainly out of accord with truth, it disappeared, it weakened, it vanished. You know, the Course also tells us that we're never upset for the reason that we think we are. He was upset because he thought he saw a fact that was not in accord with truth. And when the idea that it was a fact was brought into question, his upset began to fade. He was able to say, oh yeah, if I don't know, he says, if I can realize I don't know what that was that I saw. I mean, it just totally, totally faded. There was nothing to be upset about anymore. So I mentioned earlier that questioning is a tool. Our belief in the world says this world is a fact. That's what our belief in the world says. And yet, it's out of accord with what somehow intuitively we know to be truth. And that creates a conflict in us that is not really bearable. And this is why we become upset. This is where suffering comes from. I always tell people, the real reason you're suffering is because you're out of harmony with your true self. Or we believe in facts that are not in accord with reality. That's a different way of saying the same thing. This is why we're upset. And when we begin to question what we think is true, question our beliefs, question what we've accepted as facts, and we begin to see that we're wrong about all of that, or even at least maybe we could be wrong about all of that, something in us relaxes. And the reason something in us relaxes is because we're no longer insisting there is something that is out of accord with truth. You know, using Christian language, we would say, you know, there is no longer something that goes against God's will. So questioning helps break up this seeing believing. Questioning helps break up this thought that the world is fact. And it helps to focus our attention on the fact that there is only one fact. And whenever our attention is truly focused on the one fact, we can't be upset. It's interesting because it doesn't matter what you appear to be upset about. Like I said, I talked to a person yesterday who was upset about something he observed. I talked to a person, actually it was also still yesterday, who was upset because of something she said that she perceived caused someone else hurt. It sounds like two different situations, but it's really the same story. They both believed something was a fact, and they believed that something that was a fact was out of accord with truth or went against God's will. So questioning asks, is that perception that you have, is that a fact? And if question can lead us to see that is not a fact, then there's no longer a reason to be upset. Our upset is replaced by peace, because there's no longer anything out of accord with truth, no longer anything that goes against God's will. So again, number 431. What is self-knowledge? Being, existing, here, now, present, isness. And when looked at carefully, unaffected. What is knowledge of things in the world? Observing, not being. Analysis, assumption, deduction. Which is factual and which is not factual? Self-knowledge is factual. World knowledge is not factual, and it can change. Is world knowledge truly knowledge then? No, because the world cannot be directly known. And I'm sure everyone here at some point has felt the relaxing that happens within you when you say, I don't know. You know, even the guidance that I shared just when I came in the room about letting go of teaching on Mondays, you know, if I was trying to go through the analysis of why that may have come, of what might happen with my Mondays, of why I need my time back, that would actually create stress in me. But when I'm just honest and I just say, I don't know, there's no stress. So a belief in any fact other than the true fact creates upset. When the belief that there is another fact vanishes because we move back into I don't know, we actually step back into knowledge of the only one fact. And we relax, we're at peace. And just like in the Christmas song I played today, I mean, you know, in that Christmas song, at least the way that I hear it, that Christmas song is just, it's asking us to be willing to stay in the I don't know. And just let everything else unfold and happen without defining anything else as a fact. I already, hold on, I threw something in the trash, a little sticky. Oh, good, it's right here. The words that I wrote down when the song was playing. Trust in starlight to guide where I need to be, right? If you're trusting in the starlight to guide you where you need to be, you aren't involved in analysis, assumption, deduction, deciding, right? You're only involved in being. That self-knowledge, being involved in being. So you're present with the only fact, and there's nothing to be upset about. When you're present with the only fact, there is nothing to be upset about. All right, let's go on to 432 so you can scroll down and click on 432 below the comment and reply area. Dove has posted from the Course, the belief you are powerless is the cause of all your misery. So you can see how that, look at how the belief that you are powerless would be the belief in a fact that is not in accord with truth. You see? It's the only thing that can really cause us to be upset is the belief in a fact other than truth. Taking anything else to be a fact, something that is not truth, and that's the cause of upset. All right, I'm going to read 432 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Consciousness does not undergo any change. The only apparent change is the illusory appearance, which is illusory and therefore not real. It's funny because, you know, one of the things that obviously changes is the body. And until something in us begins to shift, you know, we do believe we are the body and we do believe our loved ones are the body. And this is one reason why I think aging is so difficult for so many people. You know, we believe that we are the body, we believe that our loved ones are the body, and what aging begins to say is, you are only pretending to be immortal, but actually you're going to die. That's the message aging tries to send. You know, and when you're young, most of us, we don't think a lot about death when we're young. In fact, the funny thing is, in the Grand Canyon, they say the majority of the people who die in the Grand Canyon are young men between like 19 and 24. And the reason these young men die in the Grand Canyon is because they don't believe they can die. And so they do stupid things and they die. But the point is that, you know, when we're young, we believe we are immortal, but it's not the spirit we're looking at. We still believe we're the body, but we just don't believe anything can really happen to us. But then, when we get older and the body begins to age, it becomes clear that idea that nothing could happen to us, still thinking that we're the body, that was illusory. That idea that nothing could happen to me, the body, is illusory. Because here it comes. You can see death coming as the body begins to really age. You can't pretend anymore. Number 432 says, consciousness does not undergo any change. So, it's not I, the body, that is eternal. Or really, then the word that fits best is immortal. It's not I, the body. It's I, the self, that which has never changed, that which was the same when I was 3, as when I'm 52, as when I'm 78. Consciousness does not undergo any change. The only apparent change is the illusory appearance, which is illusory and therefore not real. Let's look at number 432 in the journal. Again, this is an inquiry that's happening. Is it true that self, beingness, is changeless? Yes. How is this known? It can be directly experienced when looked at carefully. If illusion or change is not confused with beingness or changeless, it can be known that being is the same during pain and non-pain, youth and old age, periods of certainty and periods of confusion. Being has no sense about it, and it is always present. I think the word that Muji uses is being has no quality. Health is a quality or a sense. An illness is a quality or a sense. But beingness is beyond both health and sickness. It can't really be either. It doesn't have those opposites in it. It's just isness. You know, feeling certain, there's a sense about that. We all know how we feel when we feel certain about something. I felt certain, though I don't have answers, I felt certain that I'm to let go of the Monday teaching starting in January. That was a certainty. That's a feeling. It has a quality. If I feel confused, if I'm not sure, I know what that feels like. It has a quality, right? I know the difference between certainty and confusion. But being is beyond both. It doesn't actually have either in it. Sometimes we describe beingness as health. We describe beingness as certainty. But actually, beingness is beyond all qualities. It has no sense. It is absolutely changeless. And this can be experienced if we really pay attention to it as the apparent I, the body, the mind, goes through changes. We can find and tune into this quality of changelessness, this isness that is totally unaffected by anything the personality, body, mind seems to be experiencing. It's always exactly the same. So this can be known. It can be directly experienced when it's looked at carefully. The next question. What about during sleep and other times of unconsciousness? I once saw a man on Facebook. Apparently, he was watching people's posts that say things like, you know, maybe awareness is always present, awareness is changeless, awareness does not come and go, things like that. And he said, that's not true. My awareness does come and go. It does change. It goes away every night when I go to sleep, and it comes back every morning when I wake up. Well, there's something that needs to be investigated. Is that true? I mean, is it really, really true? Our awareness that our, and now words suck because at one level it is true that awareness comes and goes. At one level it is true that consciousness comes and goes. It really depends on what you mean by awareness or consciousness. There's what I would call human awareness or human consciousness. And when we go to sleep, it goes away. And when we wake up, it returns. And no one argues this point. But is there something else? Something that's even before that, that's always present? Something that's so subtle that we totally ignore it in our lives. Most people ignore it completely their entire lifetime. Is there something incredibly subtle that is constant even when we are awake and when we are asleep? There is no change in it. So what about during sleep and other times of unconsciousness? Does it still remain changeless? That's the question. Something is present in deep sleep. All is well is present. No fear, no worry, no self-concern is present during deep sleep. This is the not affected part of self-knowledge. It is completely present in deep sleep, which means beingness is also present. Now, this is not the thought all is well. But this is why we all love to sleep. Because in our sleep, when our human consciousness goes away, our human awareness goes away, our thinking goes away, our true consciousness still is. And it's resting in itself. We go to sleep so we can take a break from being people and rest in ourself. That background that we fall asleep into and rest in is perfectly, perfectly changeless. It's just that when we wake up and the thinking mind kicks in, all this other stuff gets lobbed on top of it, and we don't notice the all is well conscious background. You could say consciousness is covered by consciousness, or awareness is covered by awareness. Consciousness with a capital C is covered with human consciousness and all of its thinking. Awareness with a capital A is covered by human attention. But it's present in the background. It's always constant. It never changes. And when we go to sleep at night and everything else disappears, we rest in it. And this is why we all love sleep. And this is why people who don't sleep well crave sleep. And this is why some people who lead lives full of fear or full of depression, they tend to what we call oversleep. They sleep a lot because their lives are so stressful, they want to spend as much time as possible in that resting posture. It's funny, when we were at Miracles in the Mountains, Brent Haskell was, you know, telling a story. It was a fictional story, but the fictional story had, you know, was being told in order to teach truth. And he was talking, it was a fictional story about us making this world, like consciously making the world, and deciding, well, these are the rules we're going to play by. And I don't remember his whole story, but, you know, there are rules of you can get sick or you can not get sick. And, you know, he's just making up all these rules about our world, and like we designed it consciously, right? But in his story, he talked about the realization that we had that we couldn't really separate perfectly completely from our home. That just wasn't possible, that we had a need to check in at home every day. Like children can go out and play, but they have to go home every night for dinner and to sleep, and then they can go out and play again the next day. You know, we had to check in every day. We knew that we had to do this. So we knew that our game had to include a way to check in every day at home. But we also wanted the game to appear real, and if we were consciously checking in at home, that would ruin the game, because then we'd know it was just pretend. So we had to find a way to go home, because we really needed to go home. We had to find a way to go home every day without consciously being aware that we were going home. That way we could get what we needed, get what we needed from home, you know, the rest, I'll say the nutrition, spiritual nutrition. We could get what we needed from home without being consciously aware that we went home so we could continue to play our game of the world. And in his story, what we created so that we could go home every day without knowing that we went home was deep sleep. This is the same realization that I came to in this inquiry that we're looking at here from May 2012. As I was looking to see, was there something that doesn't change even when I go to sleep? I realized there is an awareness that is not human consciousness, not human attention, but it's there. When I wake up, there's something in me that knows I rested well. What knows I rested well? If I was completely unconscious, I couldn't know anything. But something in me knows I rested well. It's that which is aware of my trip home that Brent Haskell was talking about. And that awareness, that consciousness, that's even before human consciousness and human attention or awareness, that is constant. Ramana Maharshi describes what we call being awake. He describes it as being, it's like being asleep without being asleep. Do you hear what he's saying? It's like being asleep without being asleep. Or I think maybe he says it's like being asleep when you're conscious or something like that. But what he's saying is that deep, restful, all is well awareness that we check in with at night when we go to sleep, and then we wake up and we forget about it, except that we somehow know we were there. He says it's having that awareness in the foreground always. It's having that always, even when our human consciousness returns. That background is now the foreground. It's the all ground. It's all there is. That's the changelessness. That's always present, even when we seem to be unconscious. It never changes. The next question, which I've already discussed, is that which is present during unconsciousness also present during periods of consciousness, such as waking and dreaming? And the answer is yes. It is just that it is subtle and it is usually covered over by the concerns and thinking of consciousness. Remember, Jesus told us in the Course that, you know, love itself could not be taught, but that our job was to seek for the blocks to love's presence. Love, then, would be that which we rest in when we are in deep sleep. That is love. And it's always present. But when we wake up from deep sleep or when we go into a conscious dream, the blocks become so apparent that we're focused on the blocks and we aren't aware that that love, that background is still present. It like gets lost to us in all of the changing forms and the thoughts. But it's never gone. And awakening is awakening to that as always present and having full attention, full awareness on that without ever losing it. It's like floating in love's embrace. It's like being asleep without being asleep. no fear, no worry, no self-concern. All is well. Always. Our changeless state, present and in the foreground, the all ground. So again, just to go back and read the Supreme Yoga original quote from 432, consciousness does not undergo any change. The only apparent change is the illusory appearance, which is illusory and therefore not real. Which means the person who wrote on Facebook that awareness or consciousness does change, that his goes away every night when he goes to sleep and comes back when he comes back, when he wakes up every morning, he was still focused on the human element. He was not yet aware of what the masters are referring to when they use those same words, consciousness and awareness. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 433. Number 433 from the Supreme Yoga says, the external phenomena are utterly useless. The external phenomena are utterly useless. All right, let's look at 433 in the journal. When self is realized, what purpose does the world have for self? This is again an inquiry. When self is realized, what purpose does the world have for self? The world can have no purpose for self because self is completely unaffected by the world. Without effect, there can be no purpose, or there cannot be purpose. The mind needs or craves entertainment. Self does not. The mind needs or craves love or approval. Self does not. The mind needs or craves a sense of safety and security. Self does not. Self is changeless and needs or craves nothing. Therefore, the world has no purpose for self. So if you can look at the self as that all is well feeling that you rest in when you sleep, remembering that there is no self, little s, self-concern at all. There's no self-concern at all in that place. In that deep rest. You can see how that deep rest has no need for the world. That deep rest that we experience when we're asleep does not require entertainment or love from someone else or approval from someone else or a sense of safety or security. It's completely beyond all of that. It has no need of anything. You know, the Course tells us that our true self has no needs. Lao Tzu, right, has told us, in whatever language he used, I don't remember his exact words, but it was the same idea that we have no needs. It's funny because I remember reading the Course, reading that we have no needs, but not at all realizing what the self is. Still totally thinking of myself as a body. And looking at that idea of I have no needs and thinking I have to get the body, personality, mind to the point where it does not perceive needs. But that's not what's meant. It's not that I have to get the body, personality, mind to the point that it does not perceive needs. It's only that I need to realize the self. The self already has no needs. It can never have a need. And again, that's not hard to see if you just take a moment to place your awareness in the perfect restfulness of deep sleep. A need can't even be imagined there. So when we wake up to that perfect restfulness as what we are, there are no needs. A need can't even be imagined. And if a need cannot be imagined, then there can be no need for the world. There's no need to see a beautiful sunset. There's no need to eat food. There's no need to be warm. These needs do not exist there. They only exist when consciousness returns. Human consciousness, I mean. The I thought. In the perfect restful self, there's no thought of need. There's no thought at all. And that's why, again, going back to the Supreme Yoga's original quote, the external phenomena are utterly useless. You see, coming from the perspective of that perfect restful self, being awake as that perfect restful self, the external phenomena are utterly useless. They have no purpose. They can have no purpose because there is no need. So let's scroll down and click on 434. In the Seven Steps to Awakening says, there is but one consciousness which is pure, invisible, the subtlest of the subtle, tranquil, which is neither the world nor its activities. It's interesting that here in 434 it's described as the subtlest of the subtle, because isn't that what we've been looking at today by contemplating the previous quotes? How incredibly subtle that background of awareness is. The changeless part, the always present, even when we go to sleep part, is the subtlest of the subtle. There is but one consciousness, which is pure, invisible, the subtlest of the subtle, tranquil, which is neither the world nor its activities. All right, let's look at 434 in the journal. It looks like an inquiry. How many things are directly known? And the answer to that is one. What is that? Beingness. What is mind? Thoughts, attention, impressions, and beliefs. These seem to make up mind. Of these things that make up mind, what is most directly experienced? Attention seems to be most directly experienced. Thoughts, beliefs, and impressions are experienced through attention. And I remember once Byron Katie said something about if you're not, I don't remember her exact words, but the idea was, if you're not thinking about the cancer, if your attention is not on the cancer, in that moment you don't have cancer. Now, she wasn't telling this person that the cancer disappeared from their body and that the cancer returned to the body when they thought about it. That's not what she meant. What she meant was, whatever, the only thing, here I'll word it differently, the only thing that can exist for you is what your attention is on. If your attention is not on it, it does not appear to exist for you. If I have cancer right now, if this body has cancer right now, I haven't been to the doctor in 2 years. If this body has cancer right now, I'm not at all aware of it. It does not exist for me, even if it's still present in the body. If I go to the doctor tomorrow and the doctor tells me I have cancer and I begin to worry about it, then it's very present for me. Right? So I can't even experience cancer unless my attention is on it. I can't experience human love, you know, romantic love, unless I place my attention on it. In the moment, I could be in the middle of a brand new budding relationship, and, you know, so much of the time my attention is on it, and I'm, you know, focused on that and how much I love him and how great he makes me feel and la-di-da-di-da-di-da. But if in the moment I'm at work and I'm fully focused on a work issue, all of my attention is on that work issue, in that moment that my attention is on that work issue, there's no budding romance for me. There's just this work issue. See, I only experience the budding romance when my attention is placed on it. I only experience the work issue when my attention is placed on it. I only experience the cancer when my attention is placed on it. And that's why when I go to sleep and human attention ceases, and I'm in that deep restful place without my attention on anything, I experience nothing. So it seems like attention is what's mostly directly experienced. That's the most direct experienced part of mind. Everything else is experienced through attention. And some people would call that attention awareness. They would say everything is experienced through awareness. So of these aspects of mind, thoughts, attention, impressions, and beliefs, what is most directly experienced? Attention seems to be most directly experienced. Thoughts, beliefs, and impressions are experienced through attention. Can attention be separated from I, and that's just a symbol that's being used for the changeless self? Can attention be separated from I, or is attention an inherent aspect of self? Yes, attention can be separated from I. Attention can be seen and redirected, whereas I cannot be seen and cannot be directed or redirected. I simply is. I can in no way stand apart from what I am. So we have to look at what that subtlest of the subtle is, as best as we can. And we have to look at what cannot be looked at. My attention, if I do have my attention on my boyfriend when I'm supposed to have my attention on my work, you know, I have this work issue I'm supposed to resolve, I have a meeting with my boss in an hour, I'm supposed to have a proposal by then, but I have this budding romance, and my attention keeps going to him and how cute he is and how he makes me feel and how much money he makes and how good that could be for me, right? And then I think, oh, wait, I can't be thinking about this right now. I see where my attention is. I can't be thinking about this right now. I need to bring my attention and my focus back to the work problem. And then I'm able to fully focus on the work problem. And I forget about the romance for a time, right? See how I can move that. If I can see attention like an object and I can place attention in another place, well, then attention is an object. It's not what I am. It's a made object. That attention is what some people also call awareness. That attention disappears when I go to sleep. That's what this guy on Facebook was talking about. He says, but it does change. It goes away when I go to sleep. That attention disappears when it goes to sleep, when we go to sleep. Why? Because that attention is not an inherent part of what we are. That is a part of the illusory ego. What we are, the subtlest of the subtle, is completely changeless. Attention is added on top of it. Because of where our attention is, we don't notice what we are. We don't notice the subtlest of the subtle. But when attention is gone, when that awareness, human awareness I call it, is gone, all that's left is true awareness. True consciousness, which is aware or conscious only of isness and all is wellness. It's only perfect rest. It's only perfect peace. It has nothing else in it. It has nothing else in it. So attention can be separated from the self, but I can't take this subtlest of the subtle. There's nothing I can do with that. I cannot change that, right? This is again what the Course tells us. We cannot change what we are. I cannot take that background that I'm talking about. I cannot take that which I fall asleep into and rest in and change that. You can't make that restfulness something other than it is. You can take attention and change it and place it somewhere else, but you cannot change that restfulness. You can only appear to stray away from it by adding other things on top of it, by covering it up. But you cannot change it. Try as you might, you will not be able to change the restful feeling you have in deep sleep. You can't take that restful feeling and redirect it. It is what it is. And that's what we are. And that's what's always present when we reawaken to what we are. So the next part of the inquiry. So is it true that self, or I, is the only thing that is directly without separation experienced? And the answer that I have for that is yes. I can change my thoughts. I can change where I place my attention. I can change my beliefs. I can change my mind about how I want to perceive something. But I cannot change that deep restfulness that I go into when I go to sleep. This I that I'm talking about is the ego. In no way can manipulate or change that. That is beyond my realm. That is beyond me. That is truth. That is God. Is it true that mind, including attention, is not directly experienced? Yes, that is true. Because mind can be separated from what I am, But I cannot be separated from what I am. Only I is directly experienced. What we call mind, which we also call ourself, that disappears when we go into deep sleep. The guy on Facebook was right. That is not changeless. It changes. It comes and it goes. The only thing he was not right about is that is not what the masters are referring to when they talk about changeless awareness. It's a shame because words can get in the way. But if we go within and we inquire, if we allow the inquiry to happen in us, is a better way to say it. If we allow the inquiry to happen in us, somehow we see these things and somehow we become clear, and then words are no longer a problem. How do you make this inquiry happen in you? As far as I know, you can't make it happen. It happens. But this takes me back to the Christmas carol that we played at the beginning. What we do is we follow our heart's callings without understanding them. When I started the seven steps a year ago, it was actually last November when I started the seven steps and I felt the guidance to do the seven steps, I had no idea that the seven steps for me was going to cause this inquiry to happen. I had no idea that the seven steps was going to take me into this scene. You see, this was not my plan. And it may not work for someone else if they say, oh, Regina, when Regina did the seven steps, this incredible inquiry happened for her. And she started to have this clarity that was beyond any clarity she experienced before. I'm going to do the seven steps and it's going to happen for me too. It might not work. You see, because copying the form of another person's path, well, that's just a mistake. If we ever want to copy someone successfully, we don't copy the form of their path. We copy what they did in order to discover their path. And that was listening to their own inner self. That's the only thing we copy. We can say when Regina listens to her own inner self, she is led to great clarity. When Diana listens to her own inner self, she is guided to great clarity. When Tom, listens to his own inner self, he is guided to great clarity. You see, that's the one key. And so when our inner self guides us to a particular book, we go to that book. When our inner self guides us away from a particular book, we go away from that particular book. If we're guided to listen to a particular teacher for a time, we listen. But then if the inner self says, okay, that's enough listening to that teacher, let's move on, we move on. And T.I. says, you do not stop at the feet of any symbols. The teachers, the books, the practices, they're all symbols. And T.I. also says, there is no truth in the world, which means even our paths of awakening are not true. I've recently been writing some thoughts down, which eventually I may share with everyone. Right now they're being shared in a very small group. But basically a part of what these thoughts are doing is they are declaring acceptance of all paths. Realizing that my way of awakening and your way of awakening can in form look completely different, but be equally perfect. And a part of what one of these statements says is all paths are illusory and none are to be mistaken for truth. Yet they all point towards truth and are all useful in awakening. That's the paradox. this whole experience of awakening is illusory. Because the true self is changeless. It's never fallen asleep. That which we fall asleep into when we go to bed at night is the same as it's always been. It's not waking up. But yet, somehow, when we're called back to it, we are giving paths. We're giving things we learn and then unlearn, practices we take for a while and then move on to other practices. And I don't know if anybody can explain why, but we don't need to know why. Just like I don't need to know why I'm not going to be doing this teaching again on Monday in 2013. We just keep going with it. We trust the starlight to guide where I need to be. And by following my inner path, by following my true heart, it is leading me back to this perfect restfulness, which is myself. So my original question that started that little monologue was, how do you make the inquiry happen in yourself? The answer is you can't. You just follow your present moment heart tug. That's what that Christmas carol today is all about. You just follow your heart and let everything around you unfold. And as Ramana Maharshi would say, all things will work out in the end, which means awakening will happen. But don't try to make yourself awaken. That's ego. Let go of all control. This month, I'm doing the strangest thing. I've told you this, you know, before, so it's not new news. But I'm listening to Christmas carols for approximately, or even at least 2 hours a day. I think maybe even more, like 3 hours a day. I'm just sitting and listening to the same Christmas carols over and over and over again. Now, if mind was to get involved, mind would say that, you know, somehow I'm, you know, trying to delay awakening, that somehow this is a distraction for me, this is not important, I should be sitting in awareness, watching awareness, or something else. But I know better, because I can feel my heart guiding me to sit and listen to these Christmas carols. What's it doing to me? Well, a little bit of what it's doing to me, I can tell you. I share that on my Facebook page, some of the realizations I have. But the truth is, that's happening at the mind level. What it's really doing to me listening to these Christmas carols, I don't think I can tell you. But I know I am to listen. And so I will listen. And that's all I need to know. I trust the stars to tell me where I am to be. Okay, I think I'm out of time for now. So we'll start on 4:35 next Sunday night, and it's been great hanging out with you guys. Bye.